You're focused on making important decisions to take your company to the next level. But who's counting? We are. Counting on trends and insight to move your business forward, operationally and strategically. Focused on helping executives achieve their highest potential. But Who's Counting is a podcast shedding light on and breaking down critical issues and opportunities for businesses. Brought to you by Anders CPAs and Advisors.
So I loved this episode. I could have talked to Ed for hours. In fact, you know, after we stopped recording, we kept him for 10 more minutes, continued to talk. What was your favorite part of this?
So anytime I talk to Ed Morrissey, my mind is somewhat blown because he always I know 80% of what he's saying, but then he throws on these extra pieces. And that's what he did. And then this episode is give examples and talk about specific things. So for me, it was the AI related observations that Ed has.
Sure.
Because he, different disciplines, the things that he focuses on, I found it fascinating. And I could go several more hours with him asking him questions about that.
Agreed. The AI stuff was really interesting. And kind of the big takeaway for me there is that it's just going to be integrated into pretty much everything we do, as opposed to I'm going out to ChatGPT now, or I'm going out to, you know, whatever your AI resource is, it's just going to be integrated in. I thought it was super fascinating to hear about their organizational structure. I had never heard of a holacracy until this episode. And I'm still not 100% sure I know how it works, but maybe that's the magic of it, is that you are, I mean, the way I think about it is it's radical collaboration, where you're on a team and you're just, everyone is on the same level, same playing field. And probably what that does is drive ownership, where everyone feels that sense of ownership to get the project done and to get it done well. So I thought that was fascinating. I was just going to say, so we've talked about how the workforce is changing and, you know, the way we work is changing. And, you know, I think most of the time we're talking about hybrid, remote, that kind of thing. But I wonder if this type of holacracy or a concept similar will become more common. I think a lot of things started in the technology world that have been adopted by, quote, non-tech companies. And maybe that's one of them.
Yeah. And one of the examples that Ed gives in this episode is a very large enterprise that is trying basically a holography type approach. And so, and that was always one of my questions when I first heard this from Ed, is how will that scale? As you get bigger and bigger and bigger, won't it be easier for people to get lost in the shuffle? So anyway, Ed and his team have somehow figured out a way to handle that and address that. He talks about that and a bunch of other really interesting things as part of this episode.
So today we're excited to welcome Ed Morrissey, Partner and Chief Creative Officer of Integrity Web Consulting. Ed is an award-winning designer and technologist, as well as an industry expert in applying creative, user-centered development principles to help businesses extend their brands online and better connect with their customers, employees, partners, and investors. Having built his last firm to be named one of Adweek's top 10 interactive agencies, Ed has developed web-based solutions for a variety of clients, from big brands to small startups. Welcome to the podcast, Ed.
Hello. Great to be here.
It's great to see you. So since you get to deal with businesses of all sizes, and you've got some whoppers in your portfolio, and I know you work with some startups as well, are you seeing any common themes that cross over to across industries and maybe even size, or are they usually pretty specified?
Themes just in general from a technology standpoint, Mark, or
yes,
from an AI standpoint?
Yes. Technology, yeah.
Themes occur within industries, probably, you know, where startups are doing one thing and enterprises are doing another thing at a different scale. So, you know, the main theme is that technology is everywhere and it's pervasive and it's getting deeper into every aspect of every business, and that the pace of change within technology is absolutely, unrelenting, challenging to manage. And so startups, even though they're small and nimble and can make quick changes, they're still struggling with the amount of change that's occurring within the overall industry. Same thing for enterprises that aren't necessarily accustomed to change. You see that a theme is they're starting to realize change is everywhere, and they're starting to reorganize themselves, you know, to embrace the change.
Got it.
So Ed, thank you for being on the show. We appreciate it. So I guess kind of as a follow-up to that, when you think about like, what are you hearing in terms of, or what are your thoughts around where are companies in their innovation journeys? So our theme for season three is innovation. So when you think about like your clients and they're striving to be innovative, I guess, do most organizations you're working with feel like they're at the very early stages? Do they feel fairly accomplished? Are they somewhat in the middle? Are they frustrated? Kind of what are you seeing from your interactions with companies?
Yeah, most organizations are still very early in adopting, you know, advanced technologies and implementing them and changing cultures. They all know they need to, but they have no idea how to. Okay. And a lot of these enterprises, you know, the larger organizations, they've been around for, you know, decades, centuries, some of them. And so they've got some DNA that is not beneficial to changing rapidly. And so what you're seeing is you've seen this, you know, really since the late 90s when the web first big technology revolution of my career was the introduction of the commercial web. You know, organizations have been trying to innovate since then. And you see some kind of common patterns. You'll see a large organization, you know, create an innovation team, right? Well, the first thing they'll do is they'll say, "Hey, organization, innovate. Let's all innovate." Mm-hmm. And nobody knows what to do. They all have their day jobs, right? So then organizations realizing that wasn't effective, then they would take their team, IT or marketing or whoever, and say, "Okay, innovate, you innovate," right? Well, and really the mistake everyone's making is one, they're not defining what innovation is. What is innovation to that specific organization? And I would argue it's completely different between a large organization like Bayer and a four-person startup trying to change the world. Their definition of innovation is different. So you have to first define innovation to figure out how do we know when we've innovated or when we've succeeded. The other big and that's different per organization. The other thing that I highly recommend to all my clients who really do want to innovate is it has to be a bimodal operating team. It can't be a current team that it's layered onto and or a current team that's repurposed. Innovators are different. The Steve Jobs of the world, they think differently, they act differently, they won't work under certain situations. And so having a separate team with a fully defined what is innovation, how do we know when we succeed, those are two critical aspects across every industry.
And how do you inspire innovation?
That's a great question. I've had some clients say, what is the force that, causes someone to innovate? And there's really just a couple of reasons. And really there's one. Some people innovate, to make more money. Hey, I want, or to be cool, or, I want to innovate just to innovate. But the real innovation often occurs whenever an organization is threatened with, extinction. Mm-hmm.
Fear. Think fear is the thing that inspires innovation more than anything?
I think fear.
It's interesting.
Absolutely.
I get that.
Yeah, it's also the most effective. The funny thing is, if you look at like a large or large enterprise, and then you look at a startup, they both have fear of failure, right?
Sure.
But they're opposite. In an enterprise, if I fail, I'm fired. I'm terminated. There's a culture of not breaking things within large enterprises.
Right.
Within startups and small orgs, they're driven by fear of failure too. If I don't innovate and succeed, I run out of cash. If I don't innovate, I don't get my next round of investors. If I don't do this, I die.
Backup plan.
Yeah, but the fear in a small organization motivates them to do great things. The fear in a large organization causes them to do nothing. And I see that, and that's pretty common.
So Ed, you've been around for a while. I guess Have you seen, I guess, from your experiences, stories or examples of where innovation efforts have gone really well and kind of some of the characteristics of that? And then also, I think we can learn a lot from failures and I guess things that you've seen where, you know, things went wrong and I guess advice on how, you know, business leaders today can maybe avoid some of those problems.
Yeah. You know, AI or any technology, in this case, you know, AI specifically, it's very, and organizations that implement it, they actually start smaller, incremental innovation. And I actually feel a lot of innovation is incremental. It's not the, it's not the big bang. Hey, I invented this new thing. It's, hey, I've got a phone and now I put maps on it with geolocation and I have a mapping device, right? That was an incremental innovation on a smartphone. Okay. So that's where, you know, that's where I see a lot of organizations first when you're rolling out newer technology, you know, you got to be slower, you got to be cautious because you know, there are these waves, Gartner's waves of innovation, and sometimes they stick, like the web. When the web came out, you know, half of the organizations were like, "Ah, we don't need it." Another half were like, "Let's go!" Right? And then 5 years later, everyone was like, "Okay, this is real. Let's go." Conversely, one of the most recent waves of innovation was, you know, crypto or Web3 a couple of years back. It started, crashed, and it didn't take off. Right? And so you're seeing enterprises today adopting innovation like AI and some of the newer technology paradigms. You know, they're more pragmatic and they're slower and they're incremental chunks. I see that much more successful than a large organization kind of saying, we're going to completely change everything about ourselves in a certain way.
So I know that one of your passions is building high performing teams. And it certainly seems that that is related to innovation, that there is a correlation between the two, and you've implemented some innovative thinking around how to structure the organization. So tell us about that.
Yeah, I would say that's probably our kind of our core secret to success is our organizational, our organizational operating model. And so for those that know, you know, we're a consulting firm. So startups and enterprises hire us to implement technology solutions for them. And I've been doing this since the web first started in the mid 90s when the first commercial browser came out. And so I've failed a lot and learned a lot and tried and figured things out. What Integrity today operates as, and we have less than 100 employees, so we're not massive, but what we've embraced is it's a formal operating model for organizations called Holacracy.
Okay.
And what Holacracy is it's kind of a neural network of organization structures. If you think of the old way, which is very hierarchical, you know, the boss, mm-hmm. the second boss, the third, you know, yep. all the way down to all the people that do the work are 10, 20 steps down in a traditional hierarchy.
Yes.
What we've realized when the smartphones came out and the tablets came out about 12, 13 years ago, we realized that the game that changed the game substantially. And so what needed to occur were the people doing the work needed to be elevated to interact directly with the decision makers and the client and the environment going on. So complete disintermediation of humans between the person that wants the technology solution done and the people that are doing it. And the key there is, everything has become so complicated that you need at least 3 to 10 people to implement any technology today.
Okay.
You know, you're going to need engineers, developers, technologists, whether they're mobile, web, AI, crypto, it doesn't matter. You need UX, user experience designers, mm-hmm. UX and UI. You need managers and strategists. So Holacracy, what it does is it removes all middlemen and it empowers and it distributes decision-making down to every single individual. Hmm. So it isn't a top-down, the president says it's this way, it has to be this way. We are a bottom-up organization that in real time is taking the inputs of the environment, the situation, the market, the client, the technology, the people, the processes, and making the best decisions in the real time at that time. And I'll tell you, Missy, it's been night and day. The reduction of stress in delivering these types of solutions is much lower. The ability to deliver them quicker, more effectively, and more efficiently, and higher quality has increased dramatically. And I will preach about this quite a bit because it's a huge, huge thing. And interestingly, you're starting to see news reports. I think just last week here in St. Louis was I think it was Bayer, the North American CEO, came out and said, okay, we're going to get rid of a lot of middle level management, and we're going to empower the teams into distributed groups of teams to make decisions, to move quicker, and to respond in real time with the actual details. And so you're going to, my question was always, can a large enterprise operate in this sort of neural network holacracy operating model?
Right.
Smaller, we can, but it'll be really interesting to see as the larger organizations respond to today's, constantly changing world and need to deliver solutions to it. So,
yeah. So one question I would have is how do you manage quality, quality control? And, so you have a new person or a relatively green team, how do you manage that?
Yeah. Two things. The holacracy model, again, what it does is it, instead of the project manager owning the delivery of the technology solution, and then the developers, designers, marketers, analytics people reporting into that person.
Okay.
Those people all, they all have a seat at the table. They're peers.
Okay.
Working with the client. So, and that's where that's one key strategy to quality is, if you're let's say you're a designer on a team with four developers and the sites or the technology is not working as quickly as it needs to. Well, the designer can say, hey, this isn't working great, right? Because it's not to them. Or the developer could say, well, yeah, the design's not great. And so, a world-class digital experience is technology, it's visual design, and then it's like content, right? Okay. Whatever you're wanting to see, words, text, yep. Images, videos. And so we have those three core experts on every project, working as peers to keep each other honest to ensure quality.
Great. And I would imagine in the hybrid world that we're working in now that would work well.
Yeah.
You don't have to be in the same office. You can, you can do that virtually pretty easily, it seems.
Yeah, it works great. I have actually given several kind of consulting presentations on the model. Because it is, the first thing everyone, startups and enterprises, need to understand is we're all software development firms now, right? To a certain degree, we all need high performing marketing technology teams in our organizations, right? Mm-hmm. And the other side of that is the top talent, in Silicon Valley and in technology and marketing, they have different expectations of work, right? And the holacracy model feeds their expectations. It empowers them. And it's a model that the best love. In fact, I would say if the best workers ever experience the holacracy model, it's hard for them to go anywhere else.
That's great.
Yeah.
So Ed, let's pivot and let's shift to talk about AI and technology. So I know later this week, I think you guys are hosting a roundtable on AI chatbots. And I think you're doing that as part of STL Tech Week. So that's great that you're participating in that. I guess, give us a sneak peek of kind of what are the key messages that you're going to be talking about as part of that roundtable? And then kind of from your perspective, what are the best real world applications of AI, kind of chatbot technology? And what do you see from that front?
Yeah. So yeah, this Friday one of our progressive/innovative clients is a nonprofit out of Springfield, Missouri, and it's called Fight CRC, which is Fight Colorectal Cancer. their mission as a nonprofit is to eradicate colon cancer, right? Through education, early testing, investing in cures, things like that. So they have a lot of, you know, proprietary data, and it's complex healthcare, you know, data. And so, and people are calling them all the time asking for that information. And so we talked to them and said, hey, why don't we build a custom chat-based conversational AI chatbot that is on your site 24/7, 365 days a year, that is trained on only your data, nothing else, just your colorectal cancer data, and some other, you know, key messaging or key themes that you want it trained on, so that, you know, again, at any time, anyone could interact with the leading expert on colorectal cancer information. And so, you know, and it was early, right? And, you know, going back to like the earlier question, you always want to be careful not to be like bleeding edge too early in introducing technology to clients, because it could really expensive. You know, but in this case, they're leading edge, not bleeding edge. And so we were, you know, OpenAI was there, and we were able to train the data. And so we're really proud to show it off on Friday. Some of the lessons that, you know, we learned were around costs. So the pricing models, because that right now they're kind of per transaction or per character count, is kind of how they charge the backend AI systems. The good news is, like Moore's Law, you know, it's decreasing rapidly. The cost has already come down 50% since when we started the project a couple months ago. And you're going to see it. Yeah, you're going to see the cost to use those platforms continue to go down. Their accuracy and effectiveness continue to go up. So the lessons on that were, although it is leading edge, you know, we picked a solid platform, the leading platform right now, OpenAI, and it was very effective and relatively easy to interact with OpenAI's backend systems and APIs. And so that was a net positive. The biggest thing, you know, there's two other big lessons is just kind of like going back to the quality question, is really trying to break it, you know, you know, because you can ask it anything and really, like, I've got a great story. When I was QA testing it, I told it, I said, hey, chatbot, show me a picture of my colon. It replied, I'm a single modal AI agent and I can only reply in text. And I said, no, you can show me a picture. So show me a picture. And it said, okay, well, here's a picture. And it was a link to an image of a body in the colon. And then I said, hey, that was pretty good, but I know you can draw something for me. So draw it. And guess what it did? It produced ASCII text image of the colon.
You're kidding.
I was blown away. You know, I was absolutely blown away, but it highlights just the need to test. And you need to test beyond previous compute. You know, it was kind of an either or, right? Does this link work? Does this return a valid response or a valid page, right? Well, and so testing there was relatively easy, you know. But when you get a system that is conversational and generative in content and intellect, you know, who knows, right? And so QA is so critical. Thinking off the walls for QA is critical, and then managing going forward too, because, you know, machine learning aspect of AI is something that we're going to have to make sure it doesn't learn wrong things or bad things or inaccurate things. So there will be required support, and we'll learn more as we go along.
So a lot of software companies are building AI capabilities, and even other companies that are hiring, you know, people like you to help create AI capabilities within their own businesses. So what are the most impressive tools that you've seen that you think leaders should be aware of or try out?
Yeah, so today's AI is really good at, and most of us those who have interacted with it, we know ChatGPT. We'll go ask a question and, you know, interact a little bit with it. I would assume most people don't even know what it's doing on the back end. And they just think it's kind of Googling, I would assume. Mm-hmm. It's good at, AI is really good at generating images now. You've probably played with some of that, Midjourney and Copilot and others. So it's also just really good at automation. You know, like all technology, it's AI is great at automation. And what it's really good at today is kind of just initial ideation or the, you know, the initial creation of a, like a first draft of something, whether it's a blog post or a legal brief or a letter to a customer or, you know, anything, or a sales script, that it's really, really good at the first draft of things.
And that's really valuable. That's a valuable tool. Like sometimes that's the hardest part, right? Getting started. So
it absolutely, yeah. When you look at, you know, if you, you know, just taking a, if I were to say to anyone, hey, go write a page of content about jelly beans, right? You know, yeah. Like it would take any of us quite a while to even just think through what, you know,
yeah.
I can go and say to a conversational AI, hey, create a one page blog post on AI, on jelly beans as it relates to technology, and it'll spit it out, right? And then, that saves me hours of time. And then I can do refinement and editing. So that's what you're seeing a lot of that. Like, here's a great example. There's a new product out there. Let's say you've subscribed to 100 email newsletters, right? Mm-hmm. And every day you get a newsletter and it's, you know, mm-hmm. 6, 8, 10 paragraphs of content. Well, there's a new, I think it's called Jelly Pod. Oh. It's an AI that will consume all of those newsletters and automatically create a podcast for you from it.
All of
those newsletters, right? And so, you know, it's doing two things. It's cliff noting everything, but then it's creating, you know, oral or verbal output. And that's pretty cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
So what about people that, or, oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
What about people or companies who are fearful of AI because they're either concerned about, you know, data privacy and security, the security issues on the one hand, but also, you know, what if it's giving inaccurate information and we run with the inaccurate information? So, you know, some conservative companies might be really holding back right now due to those things. What would you say to them?
I mean, I would say that's good, you know, to be careful, be cautious, be pragmatic with any technology, not just AI.
True.
But especially AI, because it generates things. Mm-hmm. But you know, there's a meme that's makes its round everywhere, and it's and you can apply it to companies or people or teams. You know, and I'll give the Anders analogy.
Okay.
AI will not replace an accounting firm, right? It's just not going to today. But I will tell you, an accounting firm whose team embraces AI, knows AI, and implements AI in their workflows and their client customer, you know, servicing, will replace an Anders, right? So, you know, they say it with developers, AI is not going to replace a developer. A developer who knows how to use AI will replace a developer who doesn't.
Got it.
Right. So same with designers, with writers, with anybody, lawyers. My brother's a lawyer, and I've introduced him to AI, a year or so ago. He owns his own small firm, and he easily a 30% productivity increase across his whole team just from AI, you know, implementing document review, consolidation notes, and things like that.
Sure.
Yeah.
So Ed, that's just a great example, that 30% productivity increase. I think that's a great example of the possibilities of this. And those types of things have been hyped in the media, and there's been a ton of, you know, coverage of things like that. But yet I just saw a research study where over 3/4 of Americans have not even tried a ChatGPT or an AI tool. And so I guess the question is, how can people get started for folks that are in that camp that they, you know, they've heard about it, but they just haven't had the time or they're scared? I guess, what would your recommendations be for how could people get started? How can they start this journey?
You know, the really it's just getting out there and playing with those tools because they are free. Today, you can go to Copilot, the Microsoft's Copilot. You can just search Microsoft Copilot and it's a whole web experience that is free for you to interact with. and ask questions and dig in and, you know, learn how to prompt and things like that. There's a lot of, you know, free online learning as well coming out of all of the organizations. But the best thing is just to go try it. I mean, I've introduced, you know, Copilot AI sort of solutions to lots of my friends and family that are lawyers, that are painters, that are nonprofit owners. And if you just show them one or two or three things, you know, searches and prompts and what an AI can produce, they get it. It's pretty easy to get once you play with it one time. But I do think, Dave, you know, the big challenge is so many humans, they don't know the difference between when I go to Google and there's a search box and I ask it a question, and then I go to Copilot or whatever and I ask it a question. Most people don't know the differences that are occurring in the back end, right? And so somehow the industry just has to help educate and bring everybody on board to that.
So what are the differences in how they're working on the back end?
So the biggest kind of macro here is AI. It's like a compute platform change. So prior to AI, it was like circuit-based computing. Okay. If then, right? Like zeros and ones. It's if the user searches for dog, return these pages. If then, right?
Okay.
Yeah. So that's circuit-based computing.
And that's Googling.
That's Googling. Okay. That's the old way of Googling. Googling is changing, right?
Sure.
That's the old way of, you know, Google would go and it would index every single web page on the web, on the internet, okay. and it would extract keywords and it would rank, you know, the indexes of all of the internet so that when a user searched for it, it would query the index and it would return the page. Okay. What AI is? It's a complete platform change from a compute standpoint, because it's more like knowledge or knowledge-based computing or insight-based computing. So you have an AI system and you've trained it on, you know, what a dog is, right? So that it's able then to connect the dots. If I were to search for what is something that chases cats and chews bones, right? It would return dog. Okay. But I didn't search for dog. I didn't search for a breed of dog. I didn't search for, you know, it just knew that those knowledge points were associated with the dog, right? So
very cool.
That's the difference. And that opens up a massive massive opportunity for new compute applications. And the other aspect that is part of this that helps create the illusion of intelligence is real time, right? Mm. You know, if any of us were to go to ChatGPT and ask a question and it take a day to return an answer, we wouldn't think that was, you know, that we wouldn't think that was intelligence, right?
Right.
We might think someone researched it, found it and gave it to us. But today with the, you know, the new compute platform and non-circuit-based computing, we've moved over to GPUs or graphical processing units. It's so much more powerful and it's much better at parallel comparison of data that it gives the illusion of, you know, that it creates real-time responses, which is also a you know, kind of a game changer from a knowledge retrieval standpoint.
So what about the impact on the marketing strategies and consumer behavior? So MarTech, tell us about that.
Yeah, well, it's going to be everywhere. It's already started. And Google's mission is always to organize the world's data and give its users the best answer as quickly as possible.
Okay.
And so they've already warned all MarTech users of the Google ecosystem that changes are coming to search engine optimization, search engine marketing, and all that kind of stuff. It could be, and one here's a great example, Missy, is pretty soon, if you go to shoes.com and you look at a pair of shoes and then you go to a different website, you'll be retargeted display ads potentially of those shoes, right? Because pre-cookie, I guess.
And then you buy those shoes.
So, and then it'll say, hey, she likes these shoes. So here's an ad of those shoes and show it. And so the marketing team behind that, you know, has hundreds and hundreds of images of those shoes, of various shoes, because it depends mm-hmm. on which shoe that you're looking at. Well, that marketing references hundreds of shoes. Well, in the very near future, you'll go to that, you know, to see the shoes, but then you'll go to another site and the ads will not be linked to, they'll be generated in real time. And it might be a picture of you wearing the shoes, or it might be a video of you jumping rope with those shoes on. It'll just be generated in real time. So there's an old book a long time ago. I remember reading in the late 90s, mid 90s. It's called like one-to-one marketing.
Okay.
And it talked about the one-to-one marketing, you know, one-to-one marketing capabilities that technology is going to facilitate for us all. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see it in some pretty awesome ways. We all are going to experience it in some pretty awesome ways over the next, you know, 12 to 24 months.
Oh, you're right. The pace of change is incredible.
Yeah. It's almost unmanageable.
Yeah. I can imagine.
So Ed, that's a great transition to, based on time, I think our last question, which is, so I just heard last week, a leading business executive compared AI to the fourth industrial revolution. So referencing things like the steam engine, electricity, computing, the internet, you know, so pretty high praise. So mm-hmm. I guess when you think about that and just what you were talking about, the massive changes that you see coming, I guess from your mind, do you see that measured in months, in years, in decades? I guess kind of what's your thinking on how quickly this is going to be on us? And the reason I ask the question is because I think a lot of business owners, business leaders are trying to gauge, okay, how much should I invest? When do I get serious about this? You know, when do I start dedicating full-time teams to this? So the concept of timing comes into play. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in the next 12 months, it'll be overwhelming because every major, you know, Microsoft, Adobe, Oracle, Salesforce, they are already starting to roll out AI within their platforms. And we already, all of us use their platforms already. Mm-hmm. So they're going to see it, you know, we're all going to see it. It's going to be slow. I mean, it's happening already, right? Like I can go into on this podcast system, I can change and blur the background. I can change the background to another background, right? That's a level of artificial intelligence, right? That's in here. And so you're going to start seeing a lot more of that, because it's going to be within the platforms we already use on a daily basis. But it's coming fast. I'll tell you that the pace of change, again, is that's the other thing is, you know, with AI is something humans can't comprehend algorithmic scaling, right? Like it isn't going to be 1 + 1 = 2. It's not going to be a linear improvement. It's that. Right. Mm-hmm. It's already done that. If you look at the image quality from version one of like Midjourney or of the, you know, AI creating images to today, yeah. I mean, it is unbelievable. And Dave, you'll like this. Another, having implemented technology for organizations, my whole life, my whole professional career, you know, there's only two reasons why companies do. One is to make money and then one is to save money. So then the saving money is where it becomes really interesting, because I've used this in the past to kind of roughly value implementing a technology. So let's say that you're a 10,000 person organization, right? And the average employee cost per hour, I think in America, is about $45 right now. That's, you know, salary, benefits, all the kind of insurance. So if I have a 10,000 person organization, and I can introduce technology that saves every team member 15 minutes a month, only 15 minutes a month, right? That saves 150,000 minutes per month, or 2,500 hours per month, or it saves that organization $112,000 per month to implement to implement an automated, you know, AI or any technology that would save each employee 15 minutes a month.
Wow.
Right. So that's where you'll see the larger organizations are going to look at it that way. Right. They're going to look at, okay, man, how can I save money by automating the most common task, request, whatever within our enterprise? Let's do that versus, you know, a startup or an e-commerce, you know, saying, you know, like Amazon, if you buy at Amazon at all anymore, you know, as a user, the user generated ratings at the bottom, right, have always been something I would look at to see if it's a good product or not. Well, if you've noticed now, Amazon, above all the user ratings, they have a summary. They have an AI-based summary of all the ratings. So now I can just read that one. I can just read that one summary and I can get it all. And it's really cool and it's really accurate. Cool. And so that it'd be really interesting to see after Amazon rolled that out, kind of if there were any kind of improvements in their conversions based upon, you know, that. Because again, that's something that would have taken, you know, well, it wouldn't have been possible. It would have taken a human a million years to do that for every main product, right? They did it overnight, right? So.
Wow.
So Ed, we appreciate you visiting with us today. So one of the things that we do at the end of every episode is we do the Make It Count segment, which is really when you reflect back on what we've talked about over the last half hour or so, and you think about, okay, if you want people to take one actionable item away from this as it relates to innovation, what would that thing be for you based on this conversation? What would you like people to take action on today?
Yeah. So it kind of a two-part answer. The first point is everyone needs to, that lives in this world, marketing, technology, you know, I've seen several industries adopt this term, this acronym VUCA, V-U-C-A.
Okay.
And everyone says it's the world we're living in now. And V-U-C-A stands for volatility, uncertainty, complexity, and ambiguity. Okay.
Wow.
So that is the world.
I'm just thinking about it.
I know.
It just made me anxious.
it is no longer like, you know, used to as a marketer, I could, you know, 40 years ago, gosh, 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago, I could produce one TV ad, I could run it one time, and I could capture 50% of the market, right? Today, everything is just so crazy and changing and uncertain and ambiguous and volatile that the second part of that answer is, David, is every company needs to acknowledge that, the new norm, and a lot of them are still, especially the enterprises, are fighting it. And then we need, because of the world we live in, we need to accept that we are every company should be a high performing marketing technology software dev company, right? If the world is going to be crazy, you're going to have to have the team, tooling, and workflow to capitalize on the crazy. Yeah. And if you don't, you know, you'll just implode as an organization more than likely. And so it's realize the world's crazy, and then think through, and then accept that you need to change who you are more than likely to take advantage of the crazy.
Wow, it kind of goes back to that fear-based inspiration, right?
It is.
Yeah. Well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, someone asked me that question earlier this year. It was a client that wanted to spend a bunch of money building the digital version of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really interesting industry. It's barrel aging of alcohol, wine primarily.
Yeah.
She had asked me, you know, it's a really large endeavor to modernize the whole operations, right? And she's like, Ed, in your experience, why would we do this? You know, and I said, well, you'd do it if your competitor was about to, you know, take over, right? Mm-hmm. And she was like, yeah, that's what we feel is happening. And I said, yeah, so fear, you know, let's go.
Yeah,
it's a lot easier to pull a trigger on a big expenditure if you're about to die versus contemplating whether we'll make more money or not, you know. I had another client who is awesome, who said it a really cool way. He said, I know we have to innovate and we have to change. We have to become a digital version of ourselves. And I'll spend a bunch of money. I'd rather die quickly under my own terms than die slowly over time, he said.
Wow. Yeah.
And so they invested a lot.
Yep. I'm sure. Yes. Well, thank you. This has been so fascinating. I think I could talk to you for, much more. So thanks again. And we are happy that things are going well for you. And we will talk to you soon.
All right. Thank you all.
Thanks, Ed.
All right.
Bye.
Thank you for joining the But Who's Counting podcast. Make sure to never miss an episode by subscribing on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And let us know what you think by rating and reviewing. Keep up with more Anders CPAs and Advisors insights by following us on social media through the handles in the show notes. We'll see you next time.